The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1. Text now to 51551 or email mooney@rte.ie.
It should be really happy birthday to you, happy birthday to me, happy birthday to him, happy birthday to all of us. I want to say a very happy birthday to my brother. It's his birthday the other day. I've never done that before on radio. And a very old friend of mine who's celebrating his birthday tonight right here in the grounds of Orchie to Joe Mackin. So happy birthday to all of you and happy birthday to anybody else who's having a birthday over the weekend or has just had one or has a significant one coming up. Enjoy it. Spoil yourself is what I say. We were watching the Grammys last week. Did you see Adele? What did you think? I think she's losing the plot myself. She got one award, she wanted to give it to somebody else. She did a big tribute to George Michael, fair enough. Then she couldn't sing, she stopped, she started again, she sang. There were tears, there were emotions. There were everything but real singing as far as I could say. I'm not an Adele fan, I think you know that. I've said if she ever sings a happy song, I'll change career. It's all misery and guts and chasing fellas who don't want to be with her. They can't wait to get away from her. Are you surprised? The stuff she sings. Anyway, we're celebrating another music legend tonight. If you're a fan, if you're not a fan and you have other opinions on him, that's fine too. But his name is Michael Jackson. In his lifetime, Michael Jackson won 13 Grammy Awards from a total of 36 nominations, as well as winning both the Legend and the Lifetime Achievement Awards. They don't call him the undisputed king of pop for nothing. Eat your heart out, Adele. I am, of course, talking about the late, great Michael Jackson. Gone, but not forgotten. Michael Jackson had his first taste of success in 1969 at the tender age of just 11, along with his brothers in the Jackson 5. By the age of 13, he had launched a solo career in addition to his work with the family band, and he had his first chart success with Got to Be There in 1971. That was swiftly followed the next year with his first number one solo hit and an unlikely song about a rat. In the 1980s, Michael Jackson was a dominant figure in the world of pop, and his music videos are credited with breaking racial barriers and transforming the medium into an art form. Videos like Beat It, Billie Jean, and Thriller. Thriller Live is a concert created to celebrate the career of Michael Jackson. It's now in its eighth year in London's West End, and next month, for 1 week only, the show comes to Dublin's Gaiety Theatre. Earlier, I spoke to the show's creator and Michael Jackson mega fan, Adrian Grant.
Wow, Thriller Live has been a work of my life, really, something I've been associated with Michael Jackson since the late 80s when I created a fan magazine. And Thriller Live was born out of that, really. It was created in 2006, and it's been touring the UK and Europe and across the world since 2007.
You were a real fan, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a fan of Michael Jackson, but my work with Michael came about as I was actually a fan of Prince. And when I left college, I was looking to work in the entertainment business. Mm-hmm. And there was a popular Prince fanzine called Controversy, and it was being sold in record stores and up and down the country. And I saw that Michael Jackson didn't have a fan magazine, so I asked Sony Records if I could start one. And they said yes, they gave it its blessing. I got a grant from the Prince's Trust, and I created a magazine called Off the Wall, which was published quarterly, and it was sold around the world.
Hard to believe he didn't have a magazine, a fan magazine, isn't it?
It was astounding. The Prince magazine was selling 3,000 copies a quarter, so I thought, well, if Prince can sell 3,000 copies, then Michael Jackson should better do double that. And as it was, it started off at 200 copies, and by the mid-90s, it was selling 25,000 copies every quarter. And Michael loved the magazine. I sent it to his management, and they wrote back and said, Michael loves your magazine. And then in 1990, he invited me to Los Angeles to meet him.
So what was in the magazine? What kind of stuff did you have in there?
There was contributions from other fans. There was album reviews, song reviews, video reviews, competitions.
Well, you would have been busy because he brought out quite a lot of albums.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got a great kind of like discography, and you know, the legacy of Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5 and the Jacksons is unbelievable. Great, great volume of work.
Indeed it is, and it goes right back to the very early 60s, so it makes me wonder, when did you first become aware of him?
When I was at school, all the girls loved Michael. I remember my parents playing some of the Jackson's music when I was at home when I was very young. But it wasn't until I was at school and the Thriller album came out. One of my friends gave me the album to listen to. And I thought, yeah, it's good. But then a few months later, Michael performed on the Motown 25th anniversary. And his performance then, it actually blew me away when he first moonwalked on TV. And I thought, wow, what a performer. And then I became a real fan of Michael Jackson.
But he wasn't the first person to do the moonwalk. Sure, he wasn't.
No, and Michael, fair enough to him, he's kind of like always said that, you know, he's watched a lot of great performers such as Fred Astaire and James Brown and Jackie Wilson. And he learned from those great performers. And, you know, he aspired to be a great performer himself. So he said, you know, you had to learn from the best to be the best.
Now, how old were you at the time, Adrian?
When the Thriller album came out.
Was that 83 or 85?
Yeah, that was 83, 84. 83, I became a fan, yeah.
Because I remember watching that. I was still in school at the time, and I saw it on a TV program called MTUSA, which was presented by a fellow called Vincent Hanley, who'd been a famous radio disc jockey here on RTE. And it scared the you-know-what out of me. I kid you not.
What, the Thriller video?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
I used to watch
being,
it from behind the sofa sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when, I think it was Paula Yates and Jules Holland, they did the premiere of that in the UK. And yeah, I mean, to this day, that video is still very iconic. It's still kind of like the benchmark for music videos. And Michael actually wanted it to be a short film. And, you know, to this day, you see performers like Lady Gaga put on a fantastic Super Bowl performance, and Beyonce and Justin Bieber. They're all inspired by Michael Jackson and his work.
I was looking at a picture of him before I came down, and if you just look at the iconic way he dressed, the black trousers, the sequined glove, if you just said to somebody, he's a pop star, he wore a sequined glove, everybody knows straight away it was Michael Jackson, you couldn't mistake him for anybody else. Silver socks, who else would have got away with wearing silver socks? Well, maybe Lady Gaga would have got away with silver socks. The black fedora, it was unique. He was unique.
Very much so. I remember the very first time I met him. In 1990, he's recording the Dangerous album in Los Angeles, and he walked into the studio. He was singing, he sounded amazing, and he was wearing that black fedora and a simple black shirt, and he looked great, and he was very down to earth and very, you know, very giving of his time to me, and it made me feel very much at home, and we got on great, and we spent the whole day in the studio. But yeah, I mean, he was a very loving person.
Oh God, now you've said that, I've got lots of questions to ask, you know, that jump into my mind, because I have a little mole on my face, and I sometimes, when I'm talking to people, I find them staring at it, you see. So did you find yourself staring at Michael's face very closely, or, you know,
to be honest, I mean, I didn't know what to expect the first time I met him. And as I said, he was actually very down to earth, and he was joking around. He was a big kid at heart. We had a wonderful day in the studio. I asked if I could interview him for my magazine, and he said yes. I asked if he could take some pictures of him for the magazine, and his management around him actually said, no, you can't take any pictures. But Michael said, yes, that's fine. And I took some pictures. Well, the photographer took some pictures of him, which appeared in the magazine. And at the end of the day, he invited me back to his home, Neverland Valley, for lunch.
My goodness.
And spent the weekend there, and it was just unbelievable.
Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. You had the golden ticket.
It was kind of like, it very much was a fantasy land. As I walked through the gates, I remember seeing two chimpanzees rolling around in the grass. There were giraffes, there were llamas, there was the fun fair that you hear about. And I said to the security guard who was escorting me to the house, this isn't reality. And the security guard said, well, it's reality for Michael Jackson. This is what he wakes up to every day.
But he was an extraordinary individual, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's then that I realised since the age of 11, you know, Michael Jackson had his first number one song at the age of 11. And he was surrounded by people who were always saying yes to him since, you know, he was a child. And he grew up very differently to, you know, your everyday person. You know, he was always in the limelight, and he had a lot of his childhood taken away. So I think from the person that I knew and all that he went through, I think he had coped very well with all of that. And as I said, away from the spotlight, he was very down to earth.
What was his relationship like with his father? Because I know he beat him. In fact, I think he beat all of them with a belt or a strap or something. He one time confessed to Oprah Winfrey that he did do it and that he didn't regret it because He kept them out of jail and he kept them right. His own words, abuse, some would say, others would say it was just tough love.
He was obviously very astute to get his sons together and to form the group in the first place. And a lot of credit has to go to Joe for that. Perhaps he was a disciplinarian and he worked his boys hard, but the result was that they're one of the greatest boy bands, one of the greatest groups in history.
It doesn't sound right to call them a boy band, does it? Even though they were boys.
They were when they first came out, yeah.
I know, but I mean, you never think of the Jackson 5 as a boy band.
Yeah, no.
Or do you?
No,
you don't. They seem, I don't know, a little bit better than that or something.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were genuine. They worked very hard for what they achieved. They did the circuits, they toured, they worked very hard before they actually got their first hit single, and their talent paid off, and Michael's obviously a star of the group with his vocals and everything. But they worked really hard, and Joe did push them really hard to get success.
Broke up, and they didn't break up, or am I right in thinking that?
Well, I mean, they are actually still together now, but they kind of like they grew up from boys to men. They wanted to take more creative control of their own careers and write their own songs and everything. So I think in 76 they left Motown and signed for Epic, although Jermaine remained with Motown Records. Hmm. So they went from being the Jackson 5 to the Jacksons, and I think that was a fantastic move because individually, Michael and Randy, they wrote some fantastic music. Songs like Can You Feel It and Heartbreak Hotel. And that's really when they kind of like put their own kind of like identity into the music.
But he was the real star.
No, absolutely. I mean, he was, as I said, I mean, meeting him and working with him and just watching him in the studio, he's a real genius. Again, very humble. But watching him work in the studio, he knew every detail that he wanted. He was a perfectionist. He worked really hard to get the sound that he wanted. He picked all the best musicians to work with. And he was a sucker for detail.
And a great man for the duets as well. I mean, he collaborated with quite a lot of people over the years.
Yeah, Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah. Say, Stevie Say, Wonder. Say. Oh, I love that song. Say, Say, Say. Yeah. Love that song. Twice, yeah, he collaborated with Paul McCartney twice, but did they kind of have a bit of a falling out at one stage?
I don't think it was a falling out as such. I think Michael saw an opportunity, a business opportunity. I think Paul McCartney had actually mentioned, you know, getting into publishing, and it was a good way to make some money, and then the Beatles catalogue came available, so Michael took advantage of that, that was a great move for Michael. It's a shame that Paul McCartney did feel anyways about that, then I guess he had the opportunity himself, but Michael took the first opportunity to do that, and that was a great opportunity for him.
Maybe my mind is playing tricks with me, but I remember Paul McCartney saying on TV one time that he had to pay Michael Jackson every time he wanted to sing one of his own songs because Michael Jackson had outbid him for the copyright of the back catalogue or something like that. But at any rate, I digress. So you met Michael Jackson and you got on very well with him and he liked your fanzine. But at what point in the relationship did you decide to broach the subject of Thriller Live, the show?
The show Thriller Live, kind of like, first and foremost, we created a tribute show which was held once a year in London.
Now, who's we?
And I say we, it's the everyone who helped me out with the magazine, and I had a great team around me of people who were dedicated, and they were fans themselves, and they kind of like worked ad hoc on the magazine. And with them, once a year, we'd come to London in a venue, and we'd put on a Michael Jackson day, usually around his birthday. Mm-hmm. And around 1,500 to 2,000 fans would turn up from around the UK and Europe, and many would dress up like Michael, and it included dance competitions and singing competitions, and there was a mini concert within the show. And Michael himself loved that actual day. He would send over a video crew to film it.
Did he ever attend himself?
He did eventually, yes. The show grew bigger and bigger, and then in the 10th anniversary, 2001, Michael turned up to our 10th anniversary. He came on stage, the crowd went wild, there's 3,000 people there.
Did they believe it was him? with all the lookalikes?
No, it's 100% Michael. They could definitely tell it was Michael. Okay, he actually watched the whole show from the side of the stage, and then he came on stage and he said how incredible it was, and he loved watching the young singers kind of like perform like him. And it was then that I thought, well, if this show can work for all of his fans, then maybe we could tour, not just for Michael Jackson fans, but for the wider public at large, and be kind of like a general entertainment show, pretty much like Mamma Mia were doing and We Will Rock You for Queen fans. So I thought, you know, there isn't a Michael Jackson musical, so maybe I should look at creating one.
Well, I don't want to knock We Will Rock You, but it's off the wall. I went to see it and I couldn't follow it. At least the Mamma Mia one was fairly straightforward. And I haven't seen Thriller live. So can you tell me?
Well. No,
and can I tell you that I go to London quite a lot. I walk up and down Shaftesbury Avenue and I've walked by that theatre 1,000 times and I've seen the big iconic image of Michael Jackson outside the Lyric Theatre and I haven't gone in through the doors. Tell me why I haven't gone in. Tell me why I should.
Well, you've obviously been waiting for it to come to Dublin, so now you're going to get a chance.
I know. I'm clearly going to get the chance, yeah. So what can we expect?
2.5 hours of pure hit songs, great dancers. We have 10 live dancers, 5 live lead singers, and a fantastic band, 6 great musicians, and over 30 hit Michael Jackson songs, right from the early days, from I Want You Back through to the Off the Wall album, through to Bad, Thriller, and some of the later stuff as well. And we're not a lookalike show. We're not kind of like trying to impersonate Michael Jackson. We don't have one person up there just miming to his music or anything. It's all live. And
but is there Gary one Lloyd. Michael Jackson or several Michael Jacksons?
We have 5 lead singers, and We have a female lead, and she sings songs such as The Way You Make Me Feel and Blame It on the Boogie. We have a rock Michael Jackson, Roy Taylor on this tour, who sings songs such as She's Like My Life, Beat It, Dirty Diana. We have Brick Quentin, who has got an amazing voice. He sings some of the soulful Michael Jackson songs such as Rock With You. We have a fantastic cast, and Gary Lloyd, the director and choreographer, has done a brilliant job in recreating some of Michael's iconic works such as Smooth Criminal and Beat It. And you know, when you put those songs on stage with great dancers, great singers and great choreography, it really is a feel-good show for all the family.
That's a bit unfair of me to ask you then, do you have a favourite part in the show yourself?
Well, my favourite Michael Jackson album is Off The Wall, so I kind of like do love that in the first act, songs such as Get On The Floor and Rock With You. But Smooth Criminal stands out because, you know, the video is so fantastic. Beat It's full of high energy. And Man in the Mirror, you know. But Smooth Criminal stands out because, you know, the video is so fantastic and iconic. You could go on all day. Yeah. In actual fact, the show itself could be twice in length because Michael Jackson had so much material.
Oh, yeah, yeah, such a body of work. Is it one of those shows that people get involved in it?
Definitely, you know, halfway through the first act, people are, you know, up in their seats and they are dancing to Shake Your Body Down. And by the end of the show, when Bads comes on, Black or White and Thriller, everyone's up and dancing and singing along to the songs.
Well, I suppose it's a tribute to you and a tribute to your team and a tribute to him that it opened in 2006 in the West End and it's still there.
Yeah, we've just broken a record of now the 15th biggest West End musical of all time.
Well, congratulations, Adrian.
It's a tribute to Michael Jackson and his music. I mean, as I said, I think, you know, there are certain artists, and such as the Beatles you've mentioned, Elvis Presley, Queen, who had such great volume of work. But then Michael, on top of that, he was very visual as well. So for a stage show, for a theatrical show, it just works perfectly. And we have to work hard to make sure we can, because Michael, as I said, was a perfectionist. And we work very hard, the team, the musical director, John Marr, Gary Lloyd.
To honour that.
And all the musicians worked very hard to honour that, yes.
But then you come up with a problem as well, because you had met him, so you had some relationship with him through your fanzine and then a personal relationship with him. And then when it came to casting a show like this at the beginning, it must have been difficult because you're looking at the guy, you know the guy, you have a sense of the guy, you know what a perfectionist he is, what a hard worker he is, and you then got to find people, 5 people as it is, to replicate that on stage at various stages of his life.
Yeah, that is one of the hardest things with this job and this with this show, is finding people who can emulate Michael Jackson. As I said, we're not looking to impersonate him, but definitely look for singers who can perform his songs. And that is such a challenge. You know, we go through hundreds of auditions to find those 5 people. We look all over the UK and Europe and as far afield as America to find talent. And it is really challenging to do that.
And yet at the same time, I'm sure there are so many people who would give their right arm to be in that show who are true devotees and who really are good singers too.
Yeah, we've been blessed to have some fantastic singers over the years. And for the dancers, it's a dream job. I mean, many of these dancers, they come out of college. They grew up, you know, learning and practicing to Michael Jackson dance, his music and everything. And then they get the chance to be in the show, and they work their butts off to do it. They work, you know, they're dancing 2.5 hours every night, 8 shows a week. So it's a real workout for them, and they do a fantastic job.
How many times have you seen it?
God, it must be, you know what, it must be at least 1,000 now. But honestly, when I do watch it, I don't get tired of the show.
Really?
The music is still, like, gets me going. I'm singing along to it. And, you know, I want people to have a good time. It's important to me that the audience really enjoy the show. I feel, you know, that's why I created the show, so that they could appreciate the music of Michael Jackson and that we can continue his legacy. It's not a musical in the sense that it's the life of Michael Jackson. We're not telling his story. As I said, the music speaks for itself. It's more of a concert, but we do have some narrative with links.
So is it like a review sort of thing?
Yeah, our cast kind of like will tell you about, you know, some of the history of the songs and talk you through some of, you know, the history of Michael Jackson.
Well, it's coming to Dublin, and it's not the first time you've left London, because this has been travelling around the world, has it not?
Yeah, I think we've been seen by over 4 million people now in over 30 different countries.
Wow.
We're going back to China in April for 4 months. We've been to South Africa, Australia, all over Europe, Singapore. It's been an absolute privilege to play in so many different countries, and the response in each country has been, you know, the same. There's a passion for Michael Jackson's music around the world. In Brazil we've been, and it's just been unforgettable. One of the most memorable places, I probably would say, would be Johannesburg, when we played in South Africa. The crowd there, to see the kind of like black and white audiences together, and just everyone up on their feet, especially to songs that had a message. Just that Michael wanted to bring people together, and that we're actually doing that on stage, and people are appreciating it and giving back, is fantastic for me and, you know, all the crew and everyone who works on the show.
And are your Michael Jacksons being mobbed in the same way that Michael Jackson would have been mobbed when he went somewhere like China?
There is a definite diehard following for the show.
Oh, for
and,
sure.
you know, in places like China, we have, you know, the person who plays Michael Jackson on our tour, Sean Christopher, has done a fantastic job. He's really got Michael's moves down to a T. In the West End, we have David Jordan. And these guys work hourly, you know, to create, you know, Michael's moonwalk and his moves. And
his
try
look,
to take it a bit further.
More
because
importantly,
Yeah, it's a theatrical show, and they really get into it.
But what do they look like when they're not on stage?
it takes quite a bit of makeup on to get them to, you know, to get to that Michael look. But they've got their own identity off stage.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, listen, it's going to be a great thrill to go and see this show, Thriller Live, and it comes to Dublin very shortly. And Adrian, thank you very much indeed for talking to us today.
No, thank you very much for having me.
Catch Thriller Live at the Gaiety Theatre from the 6th until the 11th of March.
The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.
It's Saturday. It's the Mooney Show. Time to play Mooney's Saturday Night Quiz.
It's my favourite part of the week. It's the time when we test your knowledge on the national airwaves. Don't let that put you off. Let's say hello to player number one, Mary Teresa Barry. Hello, Mary Teresa Barry. How are you?
Hi, Derek. How are you? I'm good, thanks.
Well, nice to talk to you. Where are you calling from?
Listowel in County Kerry.
And how is it down there these days?
Not too bad, thanks.
Are you up to anything special at the moment?
No, just making a cup of tea.
Oh, now is it Barry's tea or Lion's tea?
Lions.
No, they won't like you in that part of the world for saying Lions tea.
Barry's got too strong. I had to change the brand. Do you
I'm sure there's different blends. Tell me, did you ever collect the minstrels?
No.
We used to collect them at home. Do you remember you collect the minstrels on the boxes of Lions tea and then you'd send them off and you might win a car?
Yeah.
No, you never
did
it.
I can't recall that.
Well, did you ever collect anything and send it off in the hope you might win something?
Oh, I did. I'm sending the winning streak tickets off all the time.
Oh, were you ever in or on winning streak?
No.
Where has it all gone wrong?
I'm sending the stubs as well for the New York drive.
Oh,
I send those away as well every week nearly.
I went on that a couple of times. It's a fantastic trip.
I'd say.
Oh, you stay in a really fancy hotel.
Oh, would be beautiful.
And you get fancy meals.
My dream. A good massage would do you good.
It would. Now, let me tell you what you're playing for this evening, all right?
Yeah.
At this week's prize, to coincide with their Say Hello to More spring campaign, is with Tourism Northern Ireland to offer one lucky listener the chance to win a fabulous two-night break. It includes breakfast for two people and dinner on one evening at New Forge House, and that's a five-star country guest house in Armagh. And Armagh's not that far away. It's only up the road, in fact. And
I've never been there, though.
Oh, very nice. And you get a great deal on tiles if you're looking for tiles for the bathroom. You know, if you haggle, you'll get a good deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, the fantastic prize also includes a tour of Hillsborough Castle and Gardens, which is located
beautiful
nearby. So does that sound like something you'd like to win?
It's lovely because I love Muckross in Killarney. I go there sometimes.
Oh, then you would enjoy that.
I love the gardens. I love travelling and I love something like that now. It would be brilliant.
Well, listen, I can't rig it for you, but let's hope the questions, as Larry Gogan would say, suit you. So
thanks.
Anna Leddy, the boss, is in. She's the scrutineer today. So say hello to Anna, if you would, please. Mary Teresa.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Mary Teresa. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So you have 60 seconds on the clock to answer as many questions correctly as you possibly can. If you don't know the answer, say pass very fast. And then we move on to the next one. Are you ready?
I am, yeah.
60 seconds. Kira, starting from now. Who uses the code name 007?
James Bond.
In which country would you find the original Legoland?
Paris.
Audio question. Name this George Michael hit. Any idea?
Pass.
In Cinderella, what vegetable did the fairy godmother turn into a coach?
Pass.
What are animals who feed mainly on grasses, shrubs and heathers called?
Goats.
Name the vehicle registration for Kilkenny. The vehicle registration for
KK.
Kilkenny. KK. Name this Leonard Cohen's song.
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom.
Pass.
In which county is the Giant's Causeway?
Giant Causeway.
What is the chemical symbol for hydrogen? Any idea? Take a guess.
I don't know.
Don't know. Okay, well, hang on there now, Mary Teresa. Don't hang up. You didn't do too badly at all. You'd be amazed. The pressure gets to people when they're against the clock and
yeah,
they're on the national airwaves answering questions.
So,
quick fire. So hang on there. Don't hang up. Let's move on to player number two. And player number two this evening is Seamus Kelly, is it? Hello, Seamus.
Hello, Derek. How are you?
How are you getting on, Seamus? Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Leixlip in County Kildare.
Is that where you live?
That's where I live, yes.
And what do you do there, can I ask?
I'm retired, but I'm writing a book at the moment on a broadcaster called Moral Aberty, who used to work in your parish there.
Yeah, I remember the name, all right. Well, why are you writing a book?
Called Corot, remember?
Yeah, why are you writing a book about...
Because she's from my home village of Rathangan, and I have a particular interest in her life and work.
Oh, I see. And what's going to be in there?
She's such a versatile writer. She was... They talk her own, and she was a broadcaster, and she also wrote four novels and several plays.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, listen, the best of luck. When are you going to bring it out? Is it kind of, and I don't mean this in a negative way, is it vanity publishing, or do you have a publishing house?
It's probably my own self-publishing, and it's due out for Christmas 2017.
Well, what, 2017?
Yes.
And what are you going to call it?
A Moral Aberty story from...
Why not? in County Kildare. By Seamus Kelly. Well, listen, are you good at quizzes?
I like the odd pub quiz and see how it goes from there.
Well, let's see how you get on. Have you anybody there to help you or are you alone now?
I'm alone, really.
Well, look, I wish you the very best of luck indeed. 60 seconds on the clock starting from now. What numeric term describes perfect eyesight and a form of cricket?
20/20 vision.
What is the name of Postman Pat's pet cat?
Pat.
Name this George Michael hit.
Pass, man.
Any idea?
Pass, yeah.
Pass. In which city is the film Trainspotting set? Say pass if you don't know.
Edinburgh, Scotland, Edinburgh.
Okay. Which breed of dog has breeds called Irish, Welsh and Scottish?
Terrier.
In a game of chess, what is the only piece able to jump over another piece?
A Night.
Name this Leonard Cohen song.
Pass on a...
In which county is Vinegar Hill?
Wexford.
In Wexford, well done, you got that one right. So we'll ask you now, Seamus, you to hang on and not to hang up. We'll come back to you very shortly and let you know how you did. You're all doing very well, I think it's very close. Player number three is John Richardson. Hello, John.
Hey, Derek.
How are you getting on? A familiar name, so I know you. Am I allowed to put my hands in the air and say that?
Go for it.
Well, I know John, originally from Donnybrook. So what do you do with yourself now?
I'm not in on the moment, I'm out with a bad back at the moment, Derek.
What happened to you?
I slipped a disc. Well, they call it a slip disc, but it's not. It's a disc protruding from your back, which can do serious damage, you know. So I had to make an operation on it, so you're out of action for 6 months.
Oh, dear. Is it very painful, or is the pain gone?
It was painful. It was excruciating, Derek, for the first, like, before I got seen on the waiting list, you know, on the waiting list. So, but the minute the surgeon seen it on the Friday in Vincent's, he had me on the table Monday morning at 9 o'clock, which was great. But if the waiting was a killer, you couldn't do anything, you know.
And a happy release from it now, from the pain at least.
Absolutely.
And the stress of it too.
Yeah, but just the pain of it. I mean, there's no painkiller out there that does anything, you know. You're taking tap boxes on the day, so.
Oh, dear.
But it's all been done with now, so thank God.
Now, it says you're a big chess fan, so you would have been able to answer that last question about...
Oh, yeah, I was hoping you'd get it right tonight. I'm just glad he didn't say horse.
Well,
if you had a said horse...
Well, if you had a said horse, we might have to give it to him.
You would have to.
Well, there would be a Stewart's inquiry about his answer. Whoa.
Yeah, I love chess. That was one thing that wasn't in Donnybrook years ago, a chess club there. They had everything, but not a chess club.
Not a chess club, no. And
not even a youth club.
The interesting thing, when you go to places like Barcelona and Spain and other cities like that around there, they have these giant chess games outdoors with massive pieces that people are standing around and playing, and they always look fantastic. And it seems like such a simple thing to do, just mark out the streets and put out these pieces for people to play on. It sounds like a lovely idea.
Huh? They do have in Temple Bar and the odd festival.
Oh, do they?
Occasion.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Temple Bar.
Oh, you learn something new every day. All right, look, we're against the clock, so you have 60 seconds. I wish you the very best of luck indeed, and your 60 seconds starts now. According to the old proverb, all roads lead to which capital city?
Don't know, there.
By what name is singer Paul Hewson better known?
Bono.
Name this George Michael hit.
Faith.
The sport of exploring caves is called potholing. True or false?
False.
To what are sailors referring to when they speak of Davy Jones' locker?
Oh, dear.
Which children's television show featured the characters of George, Zippy and Bungle?
Rainbow.
Name this Leonard Cohen song.
Come over to the window.
And what is the largest reptile?
A dragon, called a dragon.
Who had a hit with the single Crocodile Rock in 1972?
Elton John.
What gas do all fuels need in order to burn?
Oil.
Who played Basil Fawlty in Fawlty Towers?
John Cleese.
John Cleese, we didn't do too badly. So if you just hang on, we'll let you know how you all did. So I'm looking at Anna Letty. Do we have a winner? Anna, could you run through the correct and the not so correct, or could you just want to give me the scores, which is going to be?
Well, Mary Teresa, what we needed to know is Legoland is in Denmark. Careless Whisper was the George Michael song. Cinderella's Fairy Godmother turned the vegetable pumpkin into a coach. And the Leonard Cohen song was First We Take Manhattan and the Giant's Causeway is in County Antrim. Seamus Kelly got 5 right. What he got wrong was Postman Pat's Pet Cat is Jess. George Michael's hit was Freedom. And the Leonard Cohen song was Dance Me to the End of Love. John Richardson.
Hey, who was going to know that? Who was going to know any of those Leonard Cohen songs?
Well, I would for a start.
You would.
I didn't set the
name
quiz.
Name 6 other people in the country who could have told me that.
Leonard is very, very
brutal.
Popular. Very popular.
Brutal.
John Richardson, according to the old proverb, all roads lead to Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Potholing is indeed the exploration of caves. The Davy Jones locker is actually the bottom of the deep blue sea.
That was a tricky one.
Leonard Cohen's song is So Long Marianne. And the largest reptile, as I'm sure you know from your Mooney Goes
Wild, is the crocodile. Never smile at a crocodile.
Water crocodile, to be absolutely exact. Anyway, what that leaves us with is a tiebreaker between John and Seamus.
I mean, a tiebreaker.
A tiebreaker.
Tiebreaker. All right, so John, are you still there?
I am there.
You're still in with a shout, despite the dodgy back. And Seamus, are you still there?
I am indeed.
Good man, Seamus. Now, let me explain how this is going to work for the tiebreaker. So, I will read out the question, and the first person to shout out their name gets to answer the question. If you get it wrong, I pass it on to the next person. And we keep going until we get a correct answer. All right, so the first person to shout out their name. All right, so here comes your question. Silken Thomas was a famous character from Irish history. What was his... Seamus, okay.
Silken Thomas, he was killed for treason. He was executed for treason.
Well, he probably was, but that wasn't the question.
Okay.
So you have to be careful when you jump in. I hadn't finished reading the question. So, John, I can give you the full question. Are you ready?
Don't think it'll help, but go ahead.
Well, listen, take a guess is what I would say. Silken Thomas was a famous character from Irish history. What was his surname?
Murphy.
You're not going to believe this. Wrong. So we move on. The same rules apply. We have another question. Are you ready, Seamus?
Yes, indeed.
And John, so you know, to be careful, jump in if you really do think you know what I'm going to ask. But if you have any doubts at all, I would hold off. So here comes your question. Which Irish battle took place in 1601?
John. Seamus.
I heard John first. John?
Go for the Battle of Boyne.
I'm afraid it wasn't the Battle of the Boyne, Seamus.
The Battle of Kinsale.
Yay! Well done, Seamus. Thank you very much, all of you, for playing. I really appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend. We'll be in touch, Seamus, about the prize, okay?
Thank you very much.
Bye! They were great players. And now, as they say, for something completely different. The extraordinary voice there of soprano Celine Byrne performing Puccini's O Mio Babbino Caro from the Mooney Tunes concert at the National Concert Hall in 2014. And next month, Celine will be performing at the Bordgosh Energy Theatre in the Moscow State Opera's production of Carmen, when she will be playing the role of faithful sweetheart Michaela. Now, Celine is in the studio with me. You're very welcome to the programme, Celine.
Thank you very much for inviting me on.
I saw a copy of the RT Guide the other day. And you were there in it. And in an interview with Michael Doherty, you say the role of Michaela is a bit of a bitch. I was shocked and horrified.
No, she's not.
A bit of a bitch to sing.
Oh, yeah. Did I say that?
Yeah.
And I was quoted as saying that.
Personal against
I'm sure
like.
I could have said it in a more eloquent way. What I meant...
Yeah, the message came across, so let's say the honest...
What I meant to say was, like, it's not such an easy role, although it's a small role, because of the tessitura in which it's written. Now, your listeners are saying, what is she talking about? Well, the tessitura...
Well, I was actually wondering what you were talking about. Never mind the listeners. I've never seen Carmen, so what's it about?
Well, just getting back to that point, it's just the tessitura means that it's in the range in which it's written. So it's written quite high. So basically, you're singing up in the gods the whole time and you don't really come back down to earth. So it's a difficult kind of aria to sing.
That's an example.
That je dis crie anime fivon. It's just up there. It stays up there. It stays up in the gods. But Carmen is a wonderful opera. I mean, anybody that's out there knows that Carmen is an opera. So even if they haven't seen it, they know it exists.
I'm told it's very sexy.
Well, Carmen's very sexy.
Oh, is she? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, she is beautiful. And she tempts Don Jose, who's actually is actually my boyfriend, actually.
Okay. So you're a bit devastated you didn't get the role of Carmen, are you?
No. No, I couldn't sing Carmen because Carmen's for a mezzo-soprano, so it's a different voice type.
But excuse I.
Yeah, it's for a different voice type. So I would never actually sing Carmen. It's just one of those wonderful mezzo roles. I sing the role of Michaela because that's the soprano role in the opera, and it's a great role as well. But it's a country, it kind of a bit like myself. It's a country. She's a country girl, and she comes looking for her boyfriend with a letter from her mom, from his mom. And in the meantime, he's been in the city, and out comes Carmen and seduces him, and
oh,
he gets he gets wrapped up in that world of the gypsy world because she's a gypsy, and gets involved at all contraband and all that kind of crime. And in the end, she fancies somebody else. She fancies the toreador. Do you know the toreador tanga? That song. That's for a baritone.
Yes, I've heard it. I can't tell you when.
That's for a baritone. And she falls for him, of course. And then Don Jose sees that, and he gets jealous, and he kills her with jealousy.
Have you played the role before?
Michael, yeah, I've sung it in Covent Garden.
And do you change how you interpret it when you're doing it somewhere else for a different company, or do
it
you
depends
do it exactly
on the production.
The same way?
No, because it depends on the production also. Because if it's a modern take, you take out the kind of traditions of the country girl and trying to bring it into the 21st century.
Well, now explain that to me. I'm very innocent.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you are.
No, but come on, tell me.
No, but like if it was a kind of an old fashioned, or not so much old fashioned, but old style, classical style of portraying the opera in a production, then the country girl, because it's traditional, would be even more naive and very kind of very ladylike, and would know her place in society.
But you wouldn't sing it any differently, would you?
Well, I think you'd be a little bit more innocent.
Right, okay.
You know, a little bit more naive than you would if you were doing modern, because in the 21st century, girls are obviously different, and you would have to apply that also to the opera. So I'd say she'd be a little bit more... I'd say when she's jealous of Carmen, she'd be able to show it a bit more, because she'd be more emotive. She'd be able to show her emotions a bit more.
So how will you be in this production? So Moscow State Opera's production.
Yeah, I've done this production before, because I came here 4 years ago and it was very, very popular, and that's why it's back.
And that's why they've asked you back, presumably.
Yeah, well...
Because you were good.
Yeah, well, I'm the only Irish girl that's in it. And they came here also with their butterfly, and I was their butterfly, and I was the only Irish person in that as well. So it's nice to be... in a production in my own home country.
Well, you need a local name, I think.
Well, it's not just that you need a local name.
Not just any old local name. A local name who can do it. It's good to have a star who can actually sing it.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's a little bit of an incentive.
Yeah, well,
them.
If I say Celine Byrne, the Moscow State Opera production of Carmen, I think, well, I know Celine Byrne. I know she's a brilliant singer. I could go and see her.
Yeah,
don't have to like the rest of it.
But isn't it sad, don't you think?
No.
It's sad in a way that Moscow State Opera are bringing over an opera to Dublin, and that we're the only capital city in Europe that don't have a national opera company. Now, I know we have Wexford Opera, which is now the National Opera House, but that festival is just so fantastic and has a wonderful name worldwide. It's so prestigious. But what I'm talking about is the fact that our capital city, Dublin, does not have a National Opera House.
And that's who would pay for it?
Well, look, I work a lot in Germany, and nearly all the theatres are funded by the government, the taxpayers. I know people would say, well, we've got a problem with the health system, we've got a problem with this, that and the other.
Isn't that the problem?
I'm not talking about who would be going
to the opera?
But see, I'm not talking about more money going to the arts. I'm talking about the money that's already there for the arts, that it be used to the better, for the better.
I'm sure the Arts Council and everybody else who's in charge of doling out dosh to artistic endeavours would argue that they're doing it the right way as it is.
Well, I can't say they are or they're not.
You're just arguing for your little bit.
I can't say they are or they're not, but I just think in this modern world that we're the only capital city in Europe without an opera house.
How did you get into it? Were your parents big into opera?
No, would you stop, Derek? I grew up in the country, and the thing, you know, the only thing I knew growing up in the country was how to foot turf and do the bog and go to school. That's all I basically did.
Oh, come on.
No, there was no classical music in my house.
Where did it come from then?
I always loved singing, and I have a love for singing. And I was in my high school. I thought I was in America there for a minute. In secondary school, I was in the school play. I played My Fair Lady, so I got to say that famous line, you know, "Dover, move your blooming ass." I love that. I absolutely love that, because I was like, yeah, I get to say a bold word. But I did that, and then I joined Nace Musical Society. So my love for singing was always there. And then when I was 18, I went... Long story short, I went as an au pair to Milan, and I lived there for a year. And in that time, I went to see an opera. And I remember sitting there in La Scala. Didn't know how prestigious that was at the time, because to me, it was just, you know, an opera house. I didn't realise it was the opera house, the most famous one. And I remember looking at the opera. I can't even remember what the opera was, because I was clueless. And I remember sitting there and watching it and going, oh, my goodness, that's what I want to do. That's it, really.
And did you say it out loud? Did
no.
people hear you?
I didn't get up. No, there was no kind of like, oh my God, no, Eureka!
How did you then go about doing it?
I came home and I rang some of the colleges, music colleges, and I said, is there somewhere I can go to get singing lessons? And then I went to the Leinster School of Music, as it was then, and started my first singing lessons there. And then I went to the DIT, and one thing led to another. I did my degree, I did my master's, yeah, and here I am now.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, and
well,
I love
well
it.
Done. We're delighted for you. Now, I'm told that you're a good friend of, is it Jose or Jose Carreras?
Jose.
How does he pronounce it?
Jose.
Where's he from?
Spain.
So it's Jose. It's Jose when
he
they're from Portugal, isn't that correct?
He would say he's Catalan and not Spanish.
Well,
you know,
he's probably right.
Because he's making a political divide, and he's always very, you know, even when we do the zarzuela, which is the Spanish music, he always, and when we do the Neapolitan songs and some of the Spanish songs, he would sing them in Catalan as opposed to Spanish.
And have you performed with him many times?
Over 30 times now.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and I've been at his 80th birthday now for the last couple of years. So I've enjoyed them. They're great.
He's continually 80, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, yeah, continually 80.
Okay, listen, we're going to end with a recording of you singing. Is it Michaela or Michaela?
You're right, Michaela.
Michaela's aria from Carmen, and yeah. I'm going to let you introduce it, please.
Yeah, great. So this is the soprano aria from Carmen, and it's sung by Michaela, and you'll hear me singing it now. This is Je dis que rien ne me peut vendre.
Thanks to Celine. That's all we have time for today. Thank you to all of our contributors, all our quizzers, and to you for listening, and the crew behind the glass. Sound operator today, Kira Murphy. Our broadcast coordinator, Sinead Renshaw. Researchers, Elaine Carraher and John Riley. And the producer is Anna Letty. Don't forget, tune in to Mooney Goes Wild, 10 p.m. on Sunday nights, right here on RTÉ Radio 1. Sport will be with you next week. So till the next time we meet, bye.
The Mooney Show on RTÉ Radio 1.